So how's the average Australian to make sense of the world of money and economics as we adjust to a new Trump presidency? What's the new normal in terms of our mortgages, our jobs, the value of our dollar, whole sets of attitudes to investment and or saving by individual households, by governments, by the professional investing class, if I can put it like that? Quite significant predictions in this past week or so have not necessarily been terribly clear. Some strong warnings from the Reserve Bank about how much debt we're taking on. Mortgage arrears in regional areas are rising much faster than in the cities, for instance. Plus a sense that the whole low interest rate environment post the GFC just might be catapulted towards a sudden end. Might a President Trump be radical enough to break ranks with the policy of austerity that's prevailed over the last few years and start plunging money into infrastructure, a sort of latter-day New Deal? Well, let's try to make this more understandable by welcoming the ABC's economics editor, Ian Verinder. He's joined by Dr. Percy Allen, who now heads up his own consultancy firm but used to run New South Wales Treasury and wrote interestingly this week in the Financial Review on what he thinks is coming. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Morning.
Ian, I see that Kerry Stokes, one of our leading businessmen, said late this week that Trump believes he can run the country like a business, and that he'll discover he can't, but that he's smart enough to then adapt. I wonder what your sense is.
Well, can he adapt? I mean, he's very adept at changing his mind, so there's no doubt about his flexibility, but it seems that his opinions seem to shift daily, even less than daily, on a range of issues that are very, very important, and that's what worries me, I guess. His inability to actually adopt a philosophy and stick to it and just shift with the winds.
The other thought is that he will be the one who breaks through the closed ranks on austerity that have governed for the last 5 years with all these rule-breaking, that he might be a new sort of New Deal.
Well, look, you know, for a long time, central banks have been complaining that they are the ones doing all the heavy lifting. And, you know, it's a very legitimate argument that they've cut interest rates down to zero. And, you know, you've seen bond rates, you've seen interest rates drop below zero in a lot of the developed world. And it hasn't really worked. And you, at the other end of the spectrum, you've had governments in developed countries basically imposing austerity. And that has, it's a formula that has been a disaster if you look at Greece, if you look at a range of countries. And I mean, and our politicians here for a very, very long time have basically said you have to have surpluses or at least balanced budgets, which, you know, I believe in a balanced budget, but you have to have surpluses and then you have to have monetary policy that makes up for that by being with interest rates at very, very low rates. Now, we've gone below the levels that are, I think, applicable and reasonable, and it's not working at the moment. So for Trump to say, let's get involved in expanding fiscal policy, pumping money into the economy by investing in infrastructure, that's a good sign. But there's a balance that needs to be imposed here. And if you just cut, you know, tax rates so you don't have much money coming in or less money coming in, and then you expand your expenditure, you're going to blow out debts to a certain level. So there's a balance that needs to be imposed. And I think he's moving in the right direction, but he's blowing the balance out horribly.
And how do you see that, Percy? I mean, that whole thing of looking on and saying, well, let's say the US deficit does go right up. Does it matter?
I think it does. I agree with Ian that central banks feel that their ammunition's been exhausted, and so they're looking now to governments to drive growth from here on by expanding their budgets, particularly in the infrastructure area. The IMF itself now seems to have moved off the austerity bandwagon onto the let fiscal policy roll. The problem, though, is that Treasury departments around the world are up to their neck in debt, and they fear in the long run, if they take on more debt and interest rates do go up, their interest bill, which is already potentially at a record high, it's only low because interest rates are low, could overwhelm them. So there's going to be a difficult conundrum here. One possibility which I've raised, though it's controversial, is that the Federal Reserve may need to buy equity from the government rather than debt. A lot of the infrastructure program he's talking about is in the private sector. yet I don't think he's going to get that much in that area because the private sector at present is risk averse. It doesn't want to invest unless the government shows the lead. And so they may have to get into social infrastructure, which has either no commercial return or a very low commercial return. And that's where the Fed might be able to buy equity in government rather than debt, which is something that Treasury departments, I think, would be less resistant to.
You'll just have to do a little explanation for that. What do you mean?
Well, basically issue shares rather than bonds, because you don't have to pay interest on shares. You only have to pay it on bonds. So if, and that would be brand new, it would look
shares
like...
Shares in government?
Yeah, because they're selling it to the central bank. At present, the central bank in America is seeking permission to buy bonds directly from the government rather than in the open market. But Yellen has also asked for permission. She's talking now about buying shares. I think she's talking about private companies. But if the mechanism is basically to get money into infrastructure, and the central bank, remember to date, has basically been buying bonds and securities from banks, which have then been lending it for property and share speculation, and that hasn't really translated into strong economic activity.
Mm.
So if the government instead was to sell shares in schools and hospitals and other social infrastructure,
right,
even if it had no return to the central bank, I suspect it would give a better community return than continuing with the old quantitative easing, which was lending it to banks where it went into share and property speculation, which has made the property classes, which includes myself and others with superannuation funds,
yes,
has made us better, but ordinary working people have said, look, we've missed out in America.
Well, in fact,
that's why Trump won.
Well, indeed, I was Stephen Bartholomew's writing in Business Spectator this week, and said it could be argued that the Fed and its peers helped get Trump elected and provided the foundations for Brexit too and the general backlash against the elites. Do you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, what's happened in the past 8 years since the financial crisis, and Percy's hit upon this, is that central banks, you know, and the theory was if you lowered interest rates, people would borrow more money. They would, companies and individuals would borrow money and then spend, and that would boost consumption. Companies would borrow money and then invest. But what's happened is companies didn't invest and consumers didn't spend. What's happened is everyone has looked for, well, interest rates have gone to record low levels. I need an income. I need a yield. And they've invested in all sorts of speculative ventures. Now, it's gone into asset classes like property. It's gone into shares. It's gone into a whole range of areas that have not really boosted investment in productive capacity. So we haven't had companies investing in their own businesses. In particularly in America, companies have been borrowing money to buy back their own shares to deliver money back to investors. And so rather than create an opportunity for further employment, it's simply gone back to shareholders. So the money has actually gone through to people who are already fairly wealthy, people who own property. It's gone to people who have already invested in the stock market and they've become very wealthy. But the people who rely on an income from jobs, just it hasn't flowed through to them.
But, I mean, there's a whole other discussion as to whether we'd reached the end of that period of typical sort of post-World War II growth, and that you also had new people entering the scene, like the Asians, and that you did have a genuine new normal, that you couldn't easily ramp up the growth genie, as it were, Percy, and imagine that it would produce lovely jobs for all of the people in the developed world.
Well, there has been a transfer of income from the middle classes in rich countries to the middle classes in poorer countries. So this period has been a very good one for developing countries in developing a much bigger middle class and taking poorer people out of their situation into more prosperous situations. But the consequence in rich countries has been that much of the middle class feel as it's been hollowed out. Its incomes have been pretty flat. But much of this has been also been post-GFC in 2008. And the reality is the debt, rather than falling after the GFC, because the GFC was largely a debt-fueled bubble that burst, the debt has continued increasing. The recent IMF report showed that. The previous McKinsey report showed that. So debt has continued growing. and deleveraging hasn't seriously started. And at the same time, we've got an aging population, the demographics, the workforce is shrinking. So those two things have really been a break on growth. And the question is, how do you break out of that? Mm. And at present, infrastructure spending seems to be the best answer. And the debate now is, should governments go and borrow to kickstart this infrastructure? And as I said, Treasury departments around the world are going to say, well, we're already lumbered with debt. Please don't lumber us with more.
I just want to come to you finally, Ian Verinder. I mean, what about the American tax cuts that are planned? It'll introduce a whole lot more cash sloshing around the world, it would seem to me. And they're suggesting that it would repatriate up to $3 trillion that are abroad, including from Australia. Now, that's obviously designed to kickstart this very thing you're talking about, whether it will or not is a moot point. But, I mean, are we going to have to really look at lower corporate tax rates as a result?
This is where I have a problem with that whole philosophy. It's fine to say, let's borrow money and invest in infrastructure. But at the same time, if the government is going to say, well, let's cut off a huge amount of our revenue at the same time, well, then that means that government imposes itself a huge debt burden. And, you know, how do you fund that into the future? I've got a massive problem with governments that say cutting taxes is great for growth, because how do you justify that? I mean, I do understand investment, but you need to have a revenue that coming in to fund that investment.
Well, gentlemen, I'm going to that's just a tease of what we're going to be looking at trying to sort of work out exactly where we head and where they head. And obviously nobody knows for sure. It's certainly a most intriguing times. Thank you both very much indeed, Ian Verinder and Percy Allen.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Geraldine.
And Ian is the ABC's business editor. Percy Allen, a former head of the Treasury Department in New South Wales, now principal of his own public policy and financial advisory firm.